Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking straightforward advice to lower your tax bill with Shannon Weinstein.
Yeah, our guest today is Shannon Weinstein. Shannon is a CPA. She's a coach. She's a mentor for small business owners who want more perspective and less paperwork when it comes to their finances. Her company, Financial Solutions, offers tax strategy and fractional CFO services delivered from the heart of a teacher who values connection and authenticity. And Shannon's real life relatable examples makes financial, just the finances of business less daunting so that you can focus on serving your customers and making more money. She is the host of the Keep What You Earn podcast and a frequent speaker in masterminds and business communities. We are excited to have her join us today. So Shannon, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Shannon, we're glad to have you along. And the first question we ask everybody who comes on the podcast is, what do they like to spend money on for fun? Because Matt and I, we like to drink craft beer, and we have one basically every episode.
We're having one right now.
Yeah, it's something we splurge on in the here and now while trying to save and invest well. So yeah, what's your craft beer equivalent?
My craft beer equivalent. I would say I believe that we all spend money based on our values, and one of my most prominent ones is convenience. So I will pretty much cut a check to anyone willing to give me more time back, and one of my biggest ones is my cleaning lady.
There you go. Okay.
Like, what kind of cleanings are we talking about? Are we talking weekly, twice a month? Is this a monthly thing?
We have someone come by weekly for the house. We have a house that gathers a lot of dust. So we love to have somebody come over and just take that off of our plates. And I would hire a private chef if I could. That's next on my list of like knowing that I feel like I've made it.
Is personal masseuse number three? Is that
be number two for me.
We actually have somebody. We actually have a personal masseuse that comes down in Costa Rica where we spend half of our time. So
what?
We've checked that off the list, yeah.
I feel like I'm living the wrong life right now. I want to live the Shannon.
I need to do whatever Shannon's doing. Life. Although I also, too, have a house that gathers a lot of dust. So I feel like I'm off, you know, I'm pointed in the right direction if I'm trying to be like Shannon here. Thanks for sharing that. And before we hit record, we talked a little bit about Costa Rica. Shannon, do you want to quickly share about what y'all have got going on down there?
Yeah. So, I mean, I practice what I preach, and I believe in, you know, having a job and a business that's location independent. I wish that for everybody. And luckily, what the pandemic has done for me and my business has enabled me to, you know, be able to run my business completely virtually from anywhere I can get an internet connection. And luckily, there's a whole reason why we love Costa Rica, but my husband and I decided to buy a second home in Costa Rica during the pandemic. We spent about 8 months of last year down there and really became part of the community, met people, made friends, were able to go out. And it really helps that the restaurants and bars don't have windows and doors so that you don't have to wear your mask all the time.
Everything's open air.
That is awesome.
Well, I think before we started recording, I think Shannon might have convinced you and me, Matt, to join her.
Seriously consider it.
We'll see what happens.
I mean, and just to live somewhere where you don't need to have windows and doors. Like, yes. That's how perfect the weather is.
That does sound nice.
That sounds like a great climate to live in.
Yeah. And Shannon, let's get into it. According to your site, you became a CPA because you lost a bet with your dad. So I kind of want to hear that story. It seems like maybe poor reasoning to make a lifelong career choice, but can you fill us in on the details?
Oh, totally. But I'm so grateful for it because I'm so competitive and I stand behind my words. So what my dad was a CPA, by the way, and growing up, he used to nag me all the time, like typical father daughter, like young girl. And he's like, Shannon, you want to be a CPA when you grow up? You want to be an accountant? I'm like, no, what is that? Whatever you want, I don't want, because whatever that is must be boring, like vegetables and things I should be doing. Like, you're boring. You just have a big bookshelf downstairs and you spend all your time in the basement. No, thank you. I don't see you from February to April.
Exactly.
You know, it's not the kind of life I want to live, Dad.
Right. Like, none of this sounded attractive to me. And nobody becomes an accountant on purpose, honestly. So so what happened was I went to high school where they offered this accounting class. I was very lucky. Looking back at this, I'm going, I was lucky we had this class.
Yeah.
Right after typing.
Wow.
Which like, ages right, me.
You know how right? to punch the keys on the keyboard. Now let's talk about accounting software.
Well, there wasn't even accounting software. This stuff was by hand, you guys.
Oh, okay.
Like, this was in like...
They haven't married the two yet.
1999 or something.
Got
yeah.
it, got it.
So we would do the books for this company, right? Of course, during the course of the year. And my dad said, I want you to take this class because it fulfills one of your, you know, requirements for you to graduate. And if you hate it, I'll never ask you to be an accountant again. Which I was like, okay, I win big time if I win
this. I get
this.
My dad off my back starting today.
Right. That I was motivated. So right after that, he said, if you hate it, I'll never bother you again. If you love it, you have to major in it. And about 2 weeks in, they had one of those like parent-teacher conferences. And my teacher was like, Shannon loves this. She has over 100 average. I'm bumping her to honors accounting with the seniors. This is like a breeze for her. And he talked to me and I said, all right, like, I actually really like this.
You're like, so. Hate to admit, but you were 100% right.
Yeah, you have no idea how hard it was for me to admit that. But yeah, he was right. I actually loved it. But he framed it, and this is where I gets my heart of a teacher thing is, he framed it like, this is a language no one else speaks. And if you want to make an impact, like he knew I loved Spanish and language. That's what I really wanted to do. And he said, if you really want to learn a language and teach to other people, this is it.
Well, yeah, so you mentioned teaching, Shannon. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you figured out that you love accounting. That's great.
Yep.
But, yeah, you also love teaching. How did you realize that you love teaching? And then how did you find a way to combine those two interests?
I love teaching. I don't know. I've always been kind of gravitating towards finding a way to educate and speak. I was a tutor. I taught fitness classes for 8 years, actually. And I fell in love with that, too, it kind of helped me get over my fear of speaking or being center stage or being the center of attention, which I generally hate. But when you can command a room and you can say, like, eight more and they all have to do it, it's kind of fun.
There's a lot of power there.
Right. It's a big power grab. So, and if you can say, like, jump higher and they do, it's just, well, this is fun. You know, it's like a Simon Says where everyone has to do what you say. But yeah, no, I just enjoyed teaching and seeing transformation and seeing people better their lives because of something I did or said and having some type of impact on that. It's really like the ultimate reward.
Yeah. Well, hey, I love that you're doing this, and I feel like your mission and your heart for teaching comes through in everything that you do. Well, let's get into kind of some questions for
sure.
Our audience who like, they're like, okay, if you've got the heart of the teacher and the knowledge of a tax professional, I've got some questions for you. And, you know, we are basically like a month away from the tax filing deadline. So for those of us who haven't filed our taxes yet, myself included, what do we need to know before we sit down and then, you know, we actually attempt to get started?
Well, first of all, I know that there's a lot of folks that are listening who are just dreading the idea of taxes. They're like, ugh, and like probably already trying to hit skip. Like, I want to know, just give me the tips, give me the stuff. Like, but here's the thing with a tax return. The tax return is nothing more than a story of how your money spent the year. And we are the ones publishing that for you. You can have a CPA who just publishes it. You can have someone who actually co-authors it with you during the year, right? And you have this huge book that tells the story. Each of the different ways that you make money is just a chapter in that story. And you just have to turn that in every year. It really is that simple. It's not meant to be this daunting, you know, haunting thing. And there's plenty of people who can help you. So my best advice just getting started with it is just understand that it's a lot less complicated than we typically make it out to be. And you have to find a professional who's willing to explain and understands what you do.
It makes me think about like software updates on my computer. Like I am the king of like, remind me later. but what you're saying is that we shouldn't be doing that when it comes to our taxes.
Right.
Shannon, something else I'm thinking of too. Like, are there any specific things that we need to keep in mind considering all of the unprocessed returns from last year, all the delays that we've heard about the IRS experiencing? What do we need to keep in mind as far as that goes?
Oh, yeah. So it's a huge traffic jam right now in the IRS when it comes to paperwork. I just talked to the IRS. I talked to a few people in different offices over the past couple of months, and they've got box trucks with mail, like 5 box trucks parked outside that no one is going through because they don't have the help.
That's
wow.
And these are all
crazy.
They're all from back years. They're so far behind. And by the way, if anyone, I'm just going to dispel the myth right now. If anyone thinks that the IRS gave us extended deadlines to help us, No, they were late on their homework, and they wanted the extended deadlines because they knew they couldn't handle the influx. These guys are operating with like the same printers and copiers that we saw in Office Space. they're doing fax machines. So that's understand crazy. That they don't have instant technology. You know, they're working. It's like the DMV or any other state agency or federal agency. So we got to like throw them a bone and say, well, they're not working with a whole lot to process this stuff. So there's a ton of delays. So my advice is get your stuff done as soon as possible, because the last thing you want to do is be at the end of the line when the rush happens.
Yeah.
She's talking to you, Joel.
Well, and something else, right, is that you don't want to submit a paper return. You want to file online, and you mm-hmm. also want to make sure you opt for direct deposit, because if you deviate from that plan, you could be waiting an awful long time, you know, to have your return processed or to receive a refund, right?
Yeah, e-file is usually faster, and if you give direct deposit information, there's a blessing and a curse to that, right? You'll get your refund faster because they can do direct deposit, but then if you don't pay your taxes later, they know where your money is.
gotcha. Okay. Well, and let's talk about, you mentioned this just a little bit. You talked about, you know, you are a tax professional, and so mm-hmm. you're probably biased when I ask you this question, but I still want to hear your thoughts on it, because many people in the United States can e-file for free online. There's the IRS free file website. You can we've talked about on the podcast how Square now has a free tax filing software option, which looks pretty nice. You can pay for software. You can hire a tax professional where you live. Like, how do you think about how everyday folks should think about where and how and who they use to help them file their taxes?
That's a great question, because there's so many more options these days, and it's really hard to discern which is the best one for you. I would say if you have a really simple return, which is just W-2s, you could easily file through any type of service. I mean, you could use the softwares. You could use the free services. That's really made for simple returns. But I'll say this. Once you own a business, you're out of the simplicity. Like, you've gone from... like, you've gone through business puberty, okay? You need the adult version of everything.
Some
like,
adult strength stuff over here to
yeah,
handle
we're
that
not going, we're not going to our pediatrician anymore. We're not going, like, you've got to upgrade, especially when it comes to strategy. So if you want to save money in taxes, then you need somebody who's actually going to roll up their sleeves, look at your stuff, and dig in, because all of the formulas and algorithms in the world with software can't necessarily understand the whole big picture of what you actually do on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's really important to have a professional with their judgment on your side, especially because we can also help you react to IRS letters, or we can help you navigate around the likelihood of an audit, or support you if you do get audited. So I think that there's a lot to be said about the value of a professional. Of course, I'm biased. Of course I am. But it's why I'm in this profession, because I want to help people navigate all that.
Yeah. And it's less about just taking something off your plate, off your to-do list that you don't right. want to do yourself. And it's more like partnering with someone who has special insight and knowledge, especially if, you know, I think like you said, you're right. If you have this very, very simple return, DIY, you know, the likelihood that a tax pro is going to be able to save you bukus of dollars on your taxes is, you know, lessened in a huge degree. But you're really paying for a lot of specialized knowledge, and for hopefully the ability, the insights and the ability to, you know, find some missing money when it comes to filing taxes that you didn't know about.
Exactly. And taxes are basically this giant board game that we were all forced to play as adults. I always compare it to this. Like, it's like all of us sat down to a game of Monopoly.
We love board games over here. So
all of us sat down to a game of Monopoly. We're forced to play. Some mm-hmm. people just go around and pass go every year, and that's fine. Some people want to win. And here's the thing. There's a few of us who learn the rules and went to a four-year degree to study the rules so that we could help you win. And yep. that's exactly how you should look at this.
I love it. Yeah, I love how it's like you're saying, Joel, it's less about just someone just to do it for you, but somebody to come alongside you and provide some specific insight into your situation, like you were saying, Shannon. And that's mm-hmm. what we're going to spend the rest of our episode talking about, like some of the different ways that we can pay as little as possible legally to the IRS. But real quick, if someone, say they do have a business and hiring a tax professional is the right move, what are your suggestions for finding and for hiring the right one? Like, do you have some questions that maybe folks should ask?
Oh, absolutely. So the first thing, first and foremost, is I mostly deal with business owners. So I always want my business owners to find someone who knows their industry and understands other businesses like theirs. You want to find folks who work with similar profiles to you and have helped them save in taxes. I think that we overemphasize the importance of having someone local. It does help that they understand your state's, you know, state's taxes, but at the end of the day, I actually think it's a higher priority that you understand your federal taxes and your business taxes and everything else. Like, if you have somebody who really knows your industry, they can do the state tax forms. You can actually work with anyone nationwide. There's a common misunderstanding that you have to work with someone in your state. That's not the case.
That's great advice.
Yeah, you could even hire someone who, I don't know, maybe spends half their year in Costa Rica, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Don't worry. We have secure servers and all that stuff. But yeah, we absolutely do. We do 100% virtual nationwide. I work with folks in a whole bunch of different states.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got some more questions we want to get to with you, Shannon, including just kind of like how regular traditional employees can save the most on their taxes and how they should think about optimizing their taxes going forward. We'll get to those questions and more right after this.
All right, we're back from the break, and we're talking about lowering your tax bill with Shannon Weinstein. And Shannon, you know, you mentioned how you specialize with small businesses. But before we get to that, we want to talk about some questions. We want to ask some questions that apply to everybody out there. And so let's talk about folks who are traditionally employed, like, and just anybody who's filing a tax return, basically. Like, what are the most effective ways for everybody out there to think about optimizing their taxes?
So one of the ones that comes to mind, obviously, is retirement contributions. That's going to be one of the best ways that you can actually shelter money from taxes. But the it's going to sound funny, but what I actually recommend employees do is start a business. You can actually turn almost anything into a side hustle these days, and that just opens up so many doors for you to be able to host a field of deductions on your tax return.
All right. So if you've just got, let's say you're like, all right, start a side hustle. If you can make $400 or $500 from your side hustle this year, what sort of opportunities open up to you?
So depending on what type of business it is, right? So if you start driving for Uber, right, then like a ton of your vehicle costs get deducted. And the key here is taking expenses that you're already spending money on. Like, you're already buying your car, you're already making your payments, you're already buying gas. Why not get the IRS to essentially not reimburse you, but to get a ton of tax savings out of those types of expenses? So if you are running, let's say you're doing an e-commerce business or drop shipping or doing some type of online service, you can absolutely deduct a portion of your home through the home office deduction, you know, computers, equipment, start a podcast, this microphone, right? There's so many different things that you can deduct that, you know, maybe you wouldn't have spent money on, or maybe you would have spent money on anyway. And that's really where the magic happens, is taking money you're already spending and turning it into tax-free money.
Okay, so the IRS treats hobbies and businesses differently, right? So
yes.
So how does a person know whether kind of what their endeavor, their side hustle is considered by the IRS a hobby or a business?
I mean, ultimately, it comes down to the intent to make money. That's really... And the demonstration of that. So if you're striving to make money, if you're not making money for, you know, 3 or 4 years straight, and you're just spending money, but you have no income, then that's kind of a red flag. But overall, if you are striving to make money, and if you're bringing in some sort of income, over time, you can claim this as a business until such time that the IRS really deems it a hobby because your losses are so huge or it's just going on for so long. So the idea is that you want to find something that will actually make you income, but that you can also leverage a lot of your existing expenses into deducting.
Right. So, I mean, I guess the way I'm thinking about it is that perhaps, I don't know, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Obviously, like, everybody knows that if you make over $600, like, that is income you have to report. And so is there some sort of threshold that folks should be striving to hit in order to start taking these different deductions and in order to start making, you know, keeping up with these expenses? Like, when should folks consider kind of flipping that switch from it being a side hustle to an actual business where they're filing a business return? Because that's something that also costs money as well.
So there's a couple of things to unpack there. Number one, there's no such thing as a $600 threshold.
Okay.
That is just to get a 1099 to report. That's the reporting the income to the IRS and the person sending you the money. That actually has no impact. You should be claiming all income that you earn from your business, period. Like, you make $100, you're claiming it. But the The threshold to actually consider it a business, I mean, there's no threshold. As soon as you decide you're in business, like if one of your daughters wants to go start a lemonade stand at the end of the driveway, guess what? That's a business.
Right.
Right? Like there's no threshold to start a business. And also there are a lot of folks who come to me and say, well, I made a little bit of money, but it's not like a legit business. I'm like, well, you made money. It's a legit business. As soon as you decide you want to make money or you start making money. And you can actually deduct expenses. You can start, you know, it's a very complicated process I won't get into here, but you can start claiming your expenses before you actually make money. So if you decide to start a business in December, pay for the LLC, pay for an accountant or a lawyer, and pay for a few supplies, like that doesn't work against you. That actually works in your favor because you can still claim those expenses. So really there's nothing stopping you from starting your business, from just getting the ball rolling.
Okay. I want to ask quickly, we talked about how the IRS is understaffed. And
yeah.
I think some people are concerned maybe that, hey, if I take too many deductions, I'm going to set myself up for some sort of IRS audit. And maybe they're too conservative when they should be. These are legitimate deductions mm-hmm. they should be taking that are going to help them come tax time. How concerned should people be when it comes to getting audited? Is this something that they should like live in fear of or not?
So I'll put it this way, like you don't not go out in a rainstorm because you might get struck by lightning, right?
True.
So it's kind of the same thing. So if you're, I mean, the likelihood of getting audited is very, very low, especially if you have some type of business entity. So the likelihood of getting audited is, it's insanely low. And what happens is folks live in fear that they might get audited, like that's the negative event. But here's the thing. You should never fear an audit if you're not doing anything wrong. Right. It just means that they're going to pull you over. So like, what if the cops pulled you over even if you weren't speeding? And
right.
That's, and we're like living in fear. Like, what if a cop pulls me over? It's like, you're going 30. You're fine.
Yeah.
Right. You're
so I guess
fine.
It's more of just the pain in the butt of having yeah. to go through an audit, right? Is that the hang up?
Yeah, it's just more of an inconvenience, but you have nothing to worry about by way of like, oh my God, I'm going to jail. Like people overreact all the time. Yeah. All the time. I got text messages from people saying, I just don't want to go to jail. And I'm like, why would you go to jail? And they go, I don't know why.
Is there something like, that you should be telling me as a friend, not as a professional?
Right. I was just like, do I need to like put this on a safe line? Like, do I mean to get a burner phone? What are we doing? Like, what's going on?
Is that side hustle actually Breaking Bad-esque or what's going on?
Yeah. And I'm like, it's like secretly, I was actually like hoping for what happened. And then they're just worried about going to jail over, you know, forgetting to report a 1099. I'm like, okay, you're going to get a $50 fine and if they even catch it, and that's it. Like,
yeah, right.
It's a parking ticket. People freak out and they really over dramatize the IRS a lot. And I think we just need to demystify that into, well, they're just here to enforce the tax law Congress sets up, and they're just given their handbook to go out and do their audits or do the reviews. And again, if you have a pro on your side who can negotiate with them or to talk to them, it's even better, because the IRS, here's the thing, it's a massive inconvenience to get audited. I'm not going to lie, but the fastest they can get out of there, the happier they are. Mm-hmm. So the better you can make the documentation, the better that you can have everything set up for them, they will reward you. I mean, literally and figuratively, they'll get out of your hair fast and they'll trust you. So they'll probably be more inclined to listen to you when you make those explanations. So everybody wins when the taxpayer is prepared.
Makes sense. I like that you said that, because I feel like that just puts getting audited in a healthier perspective, and honestly, deductions as well. And kind of while we're talking about this, there's a wide range of deductions that you can take, you know, as a small business. You mentioned a couple of them there, mm-hmm. Shannon, but like, what are some that, you know, that might even seem illegal, like you're kind of pushing the envelope, but are deductions that are totally, totally legit that are actually allowed?
Oh yeah. I get this all the time where people ask, can I really hire my kids?
Right.
And
let's hear it.
And the answer is yes, you can. So
okay.
You can absolutely hire your kids. And as long as the work is legit and it's age appropriate, like you cannot hire your 2-year-old to do your social media. You can't hire your 5-year-old to drive the car. You know, just don't do anything like that. But if you want to hire your teenager to update your Instagram, cool. If you want to hire your 17-year-old to drive, you want to hire your kids to carry equipment for you, you absolutely can do that. Just pay attention to state labor laws. That's the big variable. But the IRS 100% lets you hire your kids and pay them. And because the kids get the standard deduction of what's, and see, we're in 2022, which is, I believe, well, 2021 was $12,550. It keeps going up year over year, right? So it's about $12,000, which is why you'll see that mm-hmm. number pop up if you Google this. About $12,000, the first $12,000 that the kid owns, first $12,000 the kid earns is tax-free because that's under the standard deduction that we all get a $12,000 head start when we file our taxes.
All right. So, can you get a slap on the hand for overpaying your kid, for paying them, let's say, $200 an hour when their labor isn't necessarily worth that?
Yeah. Yeah. What's reasonable compensation?
Reasonable compensation for what they're doing. So like if they work an hour a month, you don't get to pay them like $50,000.
Okay.
you don't want to do that anyway. You want to keep it under, you know, under $12,000 ideally.
Well, yeah. $12,000 right, though for 1 hour a month, is that frowned upon?
Yeah, you want to actually have legit work that's worth like $1,000 a month or whatever it may be. Yeah, it's commensurate with their skill set, their age, you know, the amount of time that they're working. But a lot of folks find a way to really paint a really solid picture for this. And you have to get real creative, too, when you find different ways for them to help around. And you would be surprised how many ways your kid can help with your business.
Well, and one of the coolest things about paying your kid to do work for your business is that if you're paying them, every dollar they make counts as earned income, which means they can, let's say they're 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, they can open up a Roth IRA and start investing for their future early. So that to me is like, it's not just that you can give them some sort of work that provides them some sort of a modest income, but that you can drastically, dramatically accelerate their ability to invest for their futures, because that's the only way you unlock an IRA early on for them.
Exactly. And not to mention the college savings plan, right? Like 529. So you can do college savings through that. So basically your business is funding your kids' college education. Hmm. And not to mention too, this is great to teach your kids work ethic and the value of a dollar. Have them work for money, have them have their own checking account and be able to see, you know, that their balance is going up or that they have to pay taxes, you know, and depending on the age and whether they comprehend this, right? But you know, in their like early teen years, this is huge if you can mm-hmm. actually hire them before they're maybe of working age. Because I started working at like 14 to 16 years old. But if you're hiring a 10, 11, 12 year old and you're teaching them about this, what a gift that could be, you know, as a side effect to this whole thing.
And not only does it teach them about personal finances, it might even lead them to becoming accountants.
right, if that's like, what you want.
Like it did in your case. Okay, so I feel like we're getting really nitty gritty here, but like, so if you are looking to hire, so, you know, Joel and I, we have 8-year-olds, and I feel like, you know, an 8-year-old can start to actually do some things around an office. Would you would you bring them on as like contract labor, or do they have to be wage? Do they need to get a W-2 in order to be
they
paid?
They have to get a W-2. So there's a very specific way to navigate this correctly. If you 1099 them, then they have to pay self-employment taxes, and that's no bueno. So you want to make sure that you're giving them, that you're doing it the optimal way, the cleanest way. So if you're hiring, and for example, right, I think I did this when I was a kid. My dad probably did this without me knowing, but I was showing up at like 8-10 years old filing, right, alphabetically. You know, I would take all these papers and put them in the file folders based on what letter they started with. Like, that's a great thing for for a kid to do. So you would basically pay the kid on payroll for sure with a W-2. Okay. If you are a sole proprietor or single member LLC and the only owners are the parent or parents of the kid. If you have an S corporation, it's a little more complicated, but you still get to the same destination. There's just a detour. If you're an S corporation or C corporation, what you do is you have a family office that is a sole proprietorship or single member LLC that hires the kid. So you start another business that hires the kid, but then the S corp or C corp pays that organization for the service.
That actually makes me think. We've got some questions about, you know, how your personal business should be incorporated and how to, you know, how that affects your tax structure. And we'll get to a couple questions on that with you, Shannon, right after this break. All right.
We're back from the break, and we're talking with Shannon Weinstein about taxes, and specifically right now, we're talking about small business taxes. Shannon, you're talking about some of the different ways that businesses can pay their kids and how that can be a completely legitimate expense and a way for you to start building some wealth for your kid. But let's talk about the exciting realm of designations, because you can choose between like a sole proprietorship, you can choose an LLC, partnerships, S corporations. Like, how should folks think about that choice when you've got so many at your disposal?
So there's a couple things that you have choices over, and then a couple things that are circumstantial, right? So when you're starting a business, if you have multiple owners, you're looking at a multi-member LLC or a partnership, right? That's pretty obvious. If there's multiple people, then you have to form it as a partnership and file as a partnership. If you're a sole owner, you're typically, this is what most people don't understand, is that when you're a sole owner operating a business, but you haven't actually filed a legal entity, you are a sole proprietor. So, but that is the default position if you've done nothing. What you can then do is get an LLC, if you're the single owner, single member LLC, which just provides legal liability protection. From my lens as a tax professional, I see no difference between a sole proprietor and a single member LLC. So you have legal liability protection, but from a tax standpoint, you guys are treated exactly the same in my eyes. So if you want to look into LLCs, talk to a lawyer, because they're the ones who see these two different things differently.
Got it.
But if you have an LLC, which I generally recommend to most business owners starting out, it's the simplest way to form. If you have a single member LLC, you can then, and this is where it gets complicated, you can elect to stay taxed as a sole proprietor, or you can, what I say, throw a couple different outfits on this business, and you can be taxed as an S corporation or taxed as a C corporation. So you get to kind of play disguise and put on a cloak of whatever, right? I look at like a superhero. Like, you get to put on these different, you know, capes.
It's like cosplay.
Exactly, right?
It sounds more like an invisibility cloak. Right,
yeah, exactly.
Invisibility cloak. I don't know what Shane has got to say about it.
Harry Potter style.
Yes, invisibility cloak from self-employment tax. So
there you go.
So what you do is you can elect to be taxed as an S-Corp or C-Corp, and I'll explain when you may want to do that. But then there's also the option of forming straight up as a corporation in your state. And it really will depend on what your goals for the business are and where you're at. So I would definitely talk to a professional to nail down what you want to do. The most common entity structure that I see in my work is LLCs taxed as S-Corporations.
Okay. And so, yeah, is there an easy filter that someone is saying, like, let's say I'm just beginning. I made $1,500 doing my business last year. I think I'm going to make $12,000 this year because I'm growing at a rapid pace. But I'm not quite at the level where it's self-sustaining or where this is my main gig. Like, what kind of filters do people need to run things through to determine, you know, which designation makes the most sense for them?
So first off, you want to have some type of LLC or protection if the assets of the business, meaning the cash in the bank account, is enough that if you got personally sued, you know, that you want to protect it. And it's really an individual judgment call on whether or not you want to put all of that money into one locker in the gym, or you want to put it into two different lockers with different lock codes, right? Because then if one gets broken into, do you want to have one in a different locker just to, you know, minimize the risk? That's just the question that I have to ask each individual client. I don't know. There's really no kind of rule of thumb on that. Okay. Because everyone treats money a little bit differently with what's significant or not. But I would say generally it's good practice to have something in place, because then you can take advantage of things like the S corporation election, which I normally recommend if you have consistently shown that you can sustain a profit of $50,000 or more in a year.
Okay.
And so what's the benefit behind that, like when you get to that level?
So why would you even want to do an S corporation? The answer would be that you save a ton in self-employment taxes. So when you make your profit as a business owner, let's say you make $100,000 in profit for easy numbers, right? $100,000 in profit, then you get taxed, and most business owners don't know this, you get taxed 15.3% in self-employment taxes.
Yep.
And I dare anybody listening, go look at your tax return that you filed last year or this year if you've already done it, and go check how much you paid in self-employment tax. I bet if you owed whatever that was, because people do not account for that. And you pay 15.3% in self-employment tax. And what happens is with an S corporation is they allow you to pay yourself as an owner employee with a W-2, a certain portion of your profits or reasonable salary, you know, we figure out reasonable salary, which is very subjective, but a portion. And then the rest of it is immune from self-employment tax, which is why I say you have an invisibility cloak. So a good chunk of your profit does not have that 15.3% tax on it when you're an S corp, which means that you can experience ridiculously high tax savings as you grow. And just by filing a couple pieces of paper, it's really awesome.
Well, so as long as you're receiving reasonable compensation, you are allowed to have owner distributions, basically, that are tax-free from, at least from self-employment tax.
Exactly. You still pay income tax on everything, but the difference is the self-employment tax does not apply to your distributions, which is fantastic for most S-Corp owners because generally your payroll is not the majority of your profit. So you can take a lot of distributions out of your business without worrying about that 15.3%. And the $50,000 threshold is really after you start breaking even on the costs of an S-Corp, like running the payroll service, hiring an accountant to do the new tax return you have to do, maybe bookkeeping, and maybe some additional registration or tax costs. So you want to make sure that you're really healthy and a profitable business so that you're not spending more for the S-Corp than you're actually saving.
Someone who is employed traditionally and gets paid through a W-2 through their employer, they might say, I don't think it's a good idea for me to strike out on my own. And one of their reasons might be that their employer pays half of that FICA tax, right? Mm-hmm. So they don't personally pay the full 15%+. What would you say to that person who's saying, I don't know if I'm ready to go start my own business, in part because they think they're going to be paying more in tax if they make that leap?
Through that one lens, I understand the math there. But if you go off on your own, now we're talking about unlocking all of those tax deductions and tax savings, right? So your profit is actually different than your income as an employee. So if you make a $100,000 salary, that's an ink. That's locked in. Like, you can't bring that number down. You can't reduce that salary down and say, well, I actually made like 30K. No, you can't really do that. But as a business owner, you can. And that's why it's far more advantageous to lower your taxable income by having some type of business on the side or some type of business income, because then you can offset that with expenses and it opens up so much potential.
Yeah, it's not a simple math problem. There's just a lot more, like you said, there's a lot more flexibility when it comes to owning your own business. And Shannon, you keep talking about sort of like some of the legal liability that you're able to waive, essentially, or some of that protection you're able to gain by incorporating. But you also say that it is not enough to actually fully protect your business. Like, why is that? And what else should folks do as they're looking to start their own small businesses from a legal standpoint?
Right. So, an LLC, for example, is like an umbrella. It doesn't prevent the rain.
Okay.
It just protects you.
The rain is still happening, but you have a little bit of, okay.
It just protects you in case it rains. So, it's not enough to protect your business. You want to have, some type, and this gets into, by the way, this gets into legal. I'm not a lawyer. This is not legal advice. Insert disclaimer here, right? But really, when it comes to protecting your business, you need to have the right levels of insurance. You need to have, the right financial management, and you need to have the right type of business entity, because you want to make sure that your assets are protected in the event that, you get sued. Because you can't even get sued personally. I think people think, oh, my business is pretty low risk and like I don't work with a lot of people where I have to worry about, personal injuries or anything like that. Yeah, but look at my business. I have cybersecurity insurance in case I get hacked, right? Or in case any of my software providers get hacked and people's personal information is taken. Mm. I have, business insurance, errors and omissions in case I goof up and write a 9 instead of a 6. Like, There are tons of different ways that you can protect yourself as a business owner based on your industry. And I just recommend exploring all of those different options and not just relying on, well, I have an LLC, so I'm never going to get sued. Like, you can get sued. It just protects your business assets from being touched if you're sued personally and vice versa. And it's not even 100% protected, because here's the thing. If you're commingling your business and personal funds, like your bank account is a whole mix of everything, if it's just like a giant gumbo of transactions and you're like, okay, what was this charge from Venmo? What was this Amazon? What was, this PayPal? If all of it is commingled and jumbled in there, then what will happen is if you get sued, right? And the judge could say, I'm just painting a you know, hypothetical, the judge could say, well, show me like your business versus your personal assets, right? And if you can't tell the difference, then why should they respect that those boundaries if you're not? Yeah. So
no, that's a really good call to anybody who has a small business to make a distinction between their personal account and their business
account. Open up that free online business checking account right now.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's a small, easy step in order to help protect yourself.
Exactly.
Shannon, I want to ask about bookkeeping and payroll. And oddly enough, we actually do these in-house because Matt is an oddball and he like really enjoys
it. I'm a nerd.
Yeah. So he's got this spreadsheet all worked out. And but most folks end up using some sort of software to help with both those kind of things.
Yeah.
Do you have tips on how to DIY this, how to do it well, or for picking a great software that's going to actually make those tasks pretty simple?
So I'll disclaim with, I use exclusively QuickBooks Online and Gusto, and I recommend both. I love both. And selfishly, I tell everyone to use them because I would love to work with them in the future. So I want them to be on our systems. But I also like them because they're functional, they're user-friendly. I find Gusto to be my favorite payroll provider because they're just so with the times in terms of language they're using on their website and how to do things and navigating. It's just, it's very friendly to a online business owner who's relatively tech savvy, who understands kind of just the flow of a website. I mean, it's easy to run reports. It's easy to find what you need. So I really like Gusto.
And so then basically like the opposite of any IRS website?
Exactly. And then I love QuickBooks Online because it is web-based. I can access it anywhere. I can access all my clients very easily. And the interface is pretty simple, where you just organize your transactions every month. You can reconcile quickly and, you know, spend maybe a couple hours a month, depending on how many transactions you have, and be done.
Nice. Both of those cost a little bit of money. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah. It depends on what level of service you need, but you know, you're looking at maybe $100 a month between both of them combined. So depending on the size of your business. Yeah. It's well worth it for the efficiencies, in my opinion. I think that I recommend any business owner use some type of software provider that helps gain efficiency and automation and will allow you to report and do things like that. I mean, as tax professionals too, if you want to work with a tax professional, they're going to demand something besides typically a spreadsheet or something. I say something better than crayon on a napkin, please.
Yeah, I was going to say something you just scribble down.
Yeah, exactly. Like, please, anything. I mean, a number written down is better than a number not written down. Yeah. But if I can see it, understand it, and it's in a format that is easily understood by a professional, it's even better.
Got it. Yeah. So, I mean, are there some free options out there, though, that would, you know, that's maybe somewhere in between the crayon on a napkin and Gusto? Is there something kind of in between that happens to be free?
Yeah. So there's a couple ways you could do that. I think Wave, if I'm not mistaken, has a free option. But you have to be savvy enough with bookkeeping. This is the thing. You can do it all for free. You can even build Excel spreadsheets, but you have to know what you're doing. And the problem is that most entrepreneurs will try to do it on their own with the spreadsheets and just organizing the activity. But that's half the equation. You have to go back and reconcile to your bank account. And we want to be able to run reports on demand pretty much and see trends and see, you know, goals versus actual. And there's a lot of insights that some of these tools can give you that would be really complicated to implement on spreadsheets on your own.
That is true.
I want to know, Matt, is Shannon making you think twice about going the DIY route here?
Hey, I've got the spreadsheets figured out, not just in categorizing expenses, but the payroll portion as well. But I can't on demand run reports.
Okay.
I will say that.
So we'll think about it, Shannon. Yeah. Thank you for the advice. I also want to just kind of ask you, because obviously we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, we are basically a month away from the personal tax filing.
Yes, the middle of March.
Yeah. But the truth is, there's very little we can do right now when it comes to 2021 taxes on somebody's personal tax return. They still have time to contribute, let's say, to a Roth IRA for 2021 if they haven't done so yet. There are small little changes that they can make. But for the most part, it's kind of baked in, right? But so what would you say people can do starting now, starting in the spring of 2022, to start optimizing their 2022 taxes for next year?
So if you think you might be a candidate for the S corporation, then the original deadline to file your S corporation is March 15th, actually, but you can still do a late election for 2022. And I say get that filed as soon as possible if you're thinking you might be over that 50K profit threshold and you think that you want to take on the responsibility of an S corporation. We actually have on our podcast, we have a 3-part series all about S-Corps, which teaches everyone about that. But if you think you're a good candidate, I would definitely look into that. And the other thing to do is really get into a good habit of bookkeeping where you're not just going to catch up every quarter or every 6 months or every year. You want to be able to have that data on demand so that you can make decisions in your business based on that. And you could actually implement strategies. So for example, if I have a client who comes to the table March 31st and they have all their books done, they have a profit and loss for Q1, we can sit there and we can start playing with how do we actually reduce taxes using the information on this sheet, right? But if you don't have that ready, then I can't do much magic. You really want to be equipped and consistent. And I would say that if you're not doing that and we're already at Q1, this is the time to really get consistent and disciplined about updating your books, because what you don't realize is that is the food journal of your business. And if you want to train like an athlete, and if you want to perform and you want to go to the Olympics, then you got to start with what are you putting in your body? What are you exercising? What are you doing on a daily basis? And that bookkeeping is that data that if I were your trainer, I would need to see in order to tell you what to do.
That's right. Just like you said at the beginning, it's just a story of how your money spent the year.
Exactly.
And you need to start writing those chapters right now, month to month.
Yeah.
Shannon, this has been an awesome conversation. We'll definitely link to that series that you mentioned there on S-Corps to your podcast. But where else can folks learn more about you, what you're up to?
So obviously the Keep What You Earn podcast, would love for you guys to join me over there and learn more there. And I am very active on Instagram. My handle is at Shannon K. Weinstein. I'm dishing out educational content. I try to make it funny, but I don't want to tell you I'm funny because then I might be overpromising. but it's very approachable. I call it the judgment and jargon-free zone. So if you hate accounting jargon and old white guys telling you what to do with your money, come on over to Instagram and let's hang out.
She's a CPA and a comedian, Shannon Weinstein. Shannon, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. My pleasure.
All right, Matt. That was a great conversation. It's always nice to encounter a witty CPA. This might be my the first time that's happened to me. But
CPA is not always known for their wit.
No, often known to be dry. But this conversation was anything but. I think Shannon offered a lot of great advice. But yeah, what was your big takeaway from this combo?
She had a lot of good knowledge to share with us. But if I had to choose one tidbit, it would be that you should probably be considering a tax professional. This is something that we harp on a decent bit, right? Like when it comes to other aspects of our finances, there's a lot that you can DIY. Well, you don't necessarily need to hire somebody to tell you to start funneling money into your 401k at work or to open a Roth IRA.
Or to help you choose the exact fund that you're going to pick.
All that's so easy. You just set it and forget it. But with taxes, you can't set it and forget it. Like that is something that is constantly evolving. It is good to have a professional who knows the ins and the outs, the laws that have changed for that year. And aside from the laws, she knows, like she's talked with people who work at the IRS. Like she, you know, talk to them on the phone.
When nobody else can, by the way.
She's got the inside line.
Yeah.
But I don't. She's not alone in that. CPAs and tax professionals, they are in contact with the IRS. And like, you know, she knows how many box trucks there are outside of the building and how backed up they are. So, you know, again, if we haven't already made enough of a case to hire a tax professional, hopefully she has done that for you. And especially if you have a small business, it's time to specifically start looking for somebody within your industry. I thought that was a little sub point, but you don't necessarily need to find somebody that's right there in your town, but specifically hire somebody who specializes in the industry in which your business operates.
Yeah, hire a specialist, right? Don't just pick somebody out of the yellow pages, which I don't even know if those exist anymore, but hire someone and interview them. Ask them questions like, say, hey, have you worked with people in my situation before? I think that's a really good question to ask when you're looking to hire a specific individual.
But how about you, man? What was your big takeaway from this conversation?
All right, I think my big takeaway was go start a business. Even a small one.
Right? Yeah, I like it.
And I think most people out there can find some way. I think, one, it provides that diversification of income. We didn't really talk about that, but it's nice to make money in multiple ways. It provides just a little more security, financially speaking.
Yeah. And there are a lot of benefits to owning your own business that we didn't talk about. Like we only talked about the tax benefits from Shannon's standpoint, but there's a lot of autonomy, doing what you love, working for yourself. We didn't talk about any of that.
No, we didn't talk about any of that. So there are a lot of pluses to starting your own business and kind of like going in that direction, at least getting started. But there are also benefits tax-wise. And so I think a lot of people, me included, a lot of years ago, I was like, Well, but no, it seems like it's better tax wise to work for somebody else. And also there, you know, you get health care through your employer too. But I think as I move further along into starting, we started this business together, and it's like, wow, there are a lot of things that you can control as the business owner, including how much in taxes that you pay, at least to a certain extent, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So I think, yeah, that's a good call to action for a lot of Out of Money listeners. It's like, if you've been thinking about it, well, maybe add this other piece of information into your decision-making process, because you know, opening your own business could be smart on a whole lot of levels.
Most definitely, man. Let's get back to the beer. You and I enjoyed a Quantum Desolation by Little Cottage. What were your thoughts on this double IPA?
All right. So anytime I hear desolation, I think the desolation of smog. I think,
think of Benedict Cumberbatch?
Usually.
Who played the voice of Smog.
Sure.
In the movies.
But the best way I can describe this beer is it kind of was the liquid form of just straight up hot pellets. Like I would just like shove some in my mouth and I started chewing them. It was hot concentrate.
Which honestly sounds terrible. Like I'm sure that would be disgusting.
That probably would be nasty.
But the way it smells, I mean, I'm totally with you. I totally get what you're saying. This is a double IPA that's, I assume this dry hopped, it's hazy. It's incredible. Honestly, it reminds me, like it has a lot of characteristics that you find in some of the Burial beers and a lot of their double dry hopped hazies. But I am so glad you and I got to enjoy this one. Big props to John out there at Little Cottage for making such amazing beers for us here in Atlanta. But Joel, that's going to be it, buddy, for this episode. We'll make sure to link to everything that we mentioned during this episode. They'll be in the show notes up on our website. And so until next time,
best friends out.
Best friends out.